This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress-them-on-the-third-date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hey, Bills Mafia. We know there's only one topic every day. All Bills, all the time. And now Matt Bove and Sal Capaccio are going really deep, talking Bills all year long, because it's always game day in Buffalo.
Well, we are less than 2 weeks away from the NFL draft. We got the schedule coming out after that. You got OTAs. And how about this, Matt? The day that we're recording this, the Buffalo Bills begin offseason workouts. I mean, things happen so quickly in the NFL. It's good to welcome everybody into It's Always Game Day in Buffalo. We are here. The start, really, kind of officially, of the 2024 season in a lot of ways.
Sal, I have a prediction about voluntary offseason workouts. I do not think Stephon Diggs is going. I don't think Stephon Diggs is going to be there. I just have this feeling that he's going to skip this one. I don't know why. I just got this feeling that that's going to happen.
You know, he's a great player. We know that. But at least we don't have to deal with any of us asking Sean McDermott, is Stephon Diggs here? Is Stephon Diggs here? Like that's been kind of the storyline the last few years. Well, listen, I will tell you before we bring in our special guest, because we have Brian Baldinger on today. As you know, I just got back from Australia last week. We recorded a podcast. Finally, it took me a week to actually get back to on regular time because of the jet lag. It's been crazy, man.
I don't know if I've ever gone that far into it. I haven't gone that far into a different time zone. The farthest I've ever been is Europe. So even that takes a couple days to get used to. So what is Australia? Isn't Australia like a 14-hour difference?
14
or something?
14 hours ahead. So we're doing this at 9 a.m. on Monday morning. It is already 11 p.m. Monday night over there, which
that's
is crazy,
disgusting.
Right?
That just crazy. Doesn't make
Our next guest and our guest here that we're very, very glad to welcome in. We do it every year. Odyssey NFL Insider. You find him on NFL Network and a whole bunch of other platforms. Brian Baldinger joins us here on It's Always Game Day in Buffalo. Brian, it's Sal. It's Matt. Have you ever been to Australia, or what's the farthest you've... What isn't that crazy when you're thinking about... You wake up in the morning, there's a hockey
international
game on.
So you go to the next day. So I'll never forget, I've been to Australia, but a buddy of mine, Kurt Menefee, he got married in New Zealand 1 year.
Oh, yes.
So I'll never forget. It was the opening weekend of wild card weekend. So I told him, he wanted me to be the best man. So I told Kurt, I'll be the best man under two conditions. You find me a place where I can watch wild card weekend. And if the marriage doesn't work, you owe me drinks for the rest of my life. I'm going all the way. So it was funny. Because you crossed the date line, I left on January 6th. I arrived on January 8th.
Yes.
My birthday is January 7th.
Oh,
so I officially skipped my birthday. So I felt like I got a year younger that year.
You do. And listen, I mean, every year this keeps you young, right? What you do. I mean, you dig into the NFL draft and NFL analysts. It's great. So thank you for joining us. That's a great story, by the way. But it did. It took me. We missed March 29th. I'm like, we never even lived that day.
Right. Exactly.
But then you come back and you live another day, basically completely,
completely
extra. Brian Baldinger joins us here on It's Always Game Day in Buffalo. I just told Matt, it's start of offseason workouts. And as Matt said, Stephon Diggs won't be there with the Bills. So let's start there.
Yeah.
Your reaction to the trade that happened while I was in Australia, by the way, the Bills trade Stephon Diggs and what it means for this organization and kind of your takeaway from the whole thing?
Well, my knee-jerk reaction when it happened was Houston got better and Buffalo got worse. That was the initial reaction. That's how I felt. That was the emotion. And then you go, wait a second. Then you find the story, right? And you're like, Buffalo's going to pay $30 million, $31 million to unload Stephon Diggs and get nothing except for a late draft pick in return. Like, to me, it said everything that you wanted to hear about Stephon. Like, I want to defend Stephon because I like him personally. Like, I see him down the field, down there, right there at the stadium, having fun with all the kids before the game. And, yeah, he's always been really good to me, and I want to defend him. But I'm saying that says everything you need to know. They're willing to take a $31 million cap hit just to unload Stephon, and no way is this team better. You can't say addition by subtraction. You can't do that. Not when he's been as important to this offense as he has been the last 4 years.
So when you look at it, though, from the success that they had in the second half of last year, kind of without him being like the focal point of the offense, does this signal a new Buffalo Bills, a different way that they want to play football? Is this like, okay, that's what we did, but that's not a thing anymore, and now build off of that?
Yeah, you know, Matt, like I was on NFL Network. I was on Total Access the night that it happened. And that was sort of my take. Like, Buffalo has transitioned. All right, they're a run-first offense. We saw what James Cook did. We saw them win 5 of the last 6. They wouldn't have gotten there unless they make the change from Dorsey to Brady and all that. And the offense changed. And like I'm trying to justify it, you know, within the walls of the Buffalo Bills and the Bills Mafia out there. And I said to myself, okay, that's great. But what are you doing on third down? What are you doing on 3rd and 13? What are you doing in the red zone? Where are you going with the ball? And, oh, by the way, part of that transition was we saw Josh literally just take on the whole NFL down the stretch against the Cowboys. I mean, the Eagles, the Cowboys. He's just running through people. And you go, that's Josh. That's who he is. He can put the team on his back. He has done that. And it cut down on the turnovers, and it did. But who's going to survive playing that style? Even Josh. Like, we always kind of question it. Like, you just can't keep trying to truck these linebackers like he does on third down, short yardage, goal line. Running for 15 touchdowns like he did last year, I don't know if that model is sustainable for a future success for how long.
Well, when it comes to the Bills and the transition from the offense last year, we saw that it was kind of a forcing it to Stephon down the stretch, and he wasn't as productive, and Brandon Bean had to make some tough decisions as far as around the roster. You brought it up. They're eating a lot of money. This feels like it's just a new iteration of the Bills, right? Now, I would not compare the Bills to the Patriots, of course, in their success, but what happened with the Patriots, Brian, every few years they changed their identity, right? And they had to kind of restock and retool. And then look at the Chiefs the last couple of years. They get rid of Tyreek Hill, and then they had to have it some turnover. And even they're doing it again this year with Legarius Sneed. So from our vantage point, yeah, they're not better today, but this is kind of needed for this team to sustain what they want to sustain while they have Josh Allen to be able to win a championship in his window.
Well, I mean, I don't disagree with any of that. I don't. I don't think the addition of, you know, say like a guy like Curtis Samuel is going to make that big of a difference. The defense has to get better if they get back to the postseason. They have to play better in the postseason.
Yep. Yep.
You know, whether it's against Kansas City, Cincinnati, the teams that have knocked them out in the last 3 years, like, they haven't played good defensively. Now, they've gone out and drafted Gregory Rousseau and Von Miller and brought him in and all this stuff. But, you know, they were a beat-up defense last year. So, you know, you kind of give them a pass. You know, you put the guys back in there at linebacker, put Matt back in at linebacker, and, put in Bernard back in at linebacker. They're going to be better. But this is still a big transition, so I know we're eventually going to get to it. But it, to me, it puts a lot of pressure to make sure you nail this draft, because that's what the Rams did in order to sort of like same thing you're talking about the Patriots. The Rams transitioned after a Super Bowl loss, took them a year, but they rebuilt their offensive line. They struck gold in the draft last year, and now we'll see. Like, it looks like they're back on track, but those fifth round picks, you know, when you go out and you get Kyren Williams and you get Cooper Kupp and you get elite players in the draft, it allows you to go back and compete again like they did this year.
So as we shift to the draft, obviously here in Western New York, a lot of the conversation is now about wide receiver. It was even before the Diggs trade. But now that he's gone, everybody's like, okay, wide receiver, wide receiver, wide receiver. When you look at the entire class, when you look at this particular group of wide receivers, what do you see as you've been kind of breaking down the film?
Well, I mean, everybody's going to talk about the three at the top, Marvin Harrison, okay, Rome Odunze, and Malik Nabers. And rightfully so. They're three really talented players. And depending who you talk to on what day, you can rank them one, two, or three. I've done it. I've had Rome up at the top. I've had them all up there. But I don't know that it's as big a drop-off as what we've seen, because we have seen second-round picks, Davante Adams, Deebo Samuel. We've seen these guys come in and have great careers and be elite players. And then we've seen, you know, I mean, Sammy Watkins and, you know, that year in 2014, a lot of those guys kind of fall along the wayside. So I think this is a very deep draft at wide receivers. And you can fall in love with Ricky Pearsall, Ladd McConkey, Keon Coleman. You know, I mean, you can fall in love with some of these guys and go, why can't they transition? They all look like they're pretty good route runners, the guys I just mentioned. They all either have something tangible that can allow for success, literally starting Labor Day weekend next year.
All right, I'm going to throw this out there from one of our fans, actually, who responded when I tweeted out we're going to have you on. This is a great segue to what you just said, Brian. Otto tweets in, so which receiver has the highest ceiling? Because I find it interesting. You say you go back and forth. Why is that? Is it because of ceiling? Is it because of the entire package? And which one might have the higher ceiling?
Well, when you watch Rome Odunze, like when I first started studying him, he reminded me of Ja'Marr Chase. But he's bigger. He's taller. He's got a bigger reach. Contested catch. He might not be the explosive athlete that Ja'Marr is, but I think he's every bit the competitor. You know, I saw him targeted, including punt returns, because he was a punt returner too. I saw him targeted over 150 times last year. He dropped three balls. And you know, I mean, he catches everything. Contested catches is the best in the country. Then I could go Marvin. Like, that's you, like, you just think about you step in to the program in Columbus and you dominate the Big Ten the day you get there. And that's with Garrett Wilson. And that's with Jackson Smith and Jigba. Like, he's dominated college football for three straight years in a row. You watch his Rose Bowl, you know, his freshman year, it's ridiculous. And then you look at Malik Nabers and you go, okay, you watch him in the slot. You just watch him run away from defenses where everybody's got the angle on him. He just runs away from him. And you go, man, those three guys. And so then you go, okay, who? Then you say, well, does it take the right quarterback to get the most out of these guys? It usually does. The quarterbacks generally are a big part of the success of the receiver. If Davante Adams went to the Atlanta Falcons last year, would he become the Davante Adams he became with Aaron Rodgers as his quarterback? I highly doubt that would happen. So a lot of it depends on where you go and just how quickly you want to assimilate. You know, Ja'Marr could go with Joe Burrow and they had instant chemistry. Justin Jefferson can go with Kirk Cousins and he lit the league up with a very accurate quarterback that reads defenses very well. So I think a lot of it depends on where you go and who you're with.
A lot of the conversation that has shifted to, okay, hey, the Bills are going to draft a wide receiver is now, hey, they might not just draft a wide receiver. They might trade a lot to try and get up and get one of those guys. Mm-hmm. So I know that you said every day it feels like they move in your mind. Who do you think fits the best with the Bills of the big three?
Well, I mean, if you put any of those three with Josh Allen, I'd say you're not going to skip a beat. You'll be the favorites probably to win the East again. I mean, I wouldn't put him right now, but like, I don't think they can get that high. Although, who knows? I mean, if the quarterbacks get pushed up, a couple of the edge defenders go, a couple of the offensive tackles go, all of a sudden Malik or Rome, whoever, might be sitting there at 12, and maybe the Broncos have already traded for a quarterback at 12. Or the Raiders saying, we already have Davante and we have what we have. You know, so if you start to see some kind of a slide, now that's an aggressive move. That would take, you're talking about an offline. Now, that's not to say that Brian Thomas, maybe he gets past Pittsburgh at 20. I mean, you could name all these guys. You know, you could look at Keon Coleman. You could look at, you know, Johnny Wilson at Florida State at 6'6", going, let's just play tall ball. Let's just go get Johnny Wilson. Let's get Josh Allen. And let's just get a 6'5" quarterback and a 6'6" wide receiver and let's go to work. I mean, you know, that might be intriguing. You know, and not have to trade. Maybe Johnny Wilson's there at 28.
I mean, there's so many good guys here, right? Xavier Leggett, Javon Baker. Yeah. There's so many really good players here. But here's one that's really polarizing to Bills fans. Keon Coleman. And I would say he's polarizing because all offseason, really going back to after the Bills lost in the divisional round, we meet with Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott in the media room, and they say, we got to get more explosive on offense, more explosive playmakers. Then we go to the combine. That word explosiveness comes up. Then rack comes up a lot. They both mentioned run after catch. This is what they're trying to build. This is why they get Curtis Samuel. He was very successful with Joe Brady and moving him around. What kind of player does Keon Coleman represent for a team that's trying to do that with his, you know, ability, no doubt about it, but is he that kind of guy that they want?
Well, he's not a burner. He's not a blazer. He proved that. And that probably dropped him down a little bit when he ran in the 4.6s. It doesn't say his career is curtailed by any stretch. We've seen guys. Devontae Adams was the eighth receiver taken in 2014. He ran a 4.58. Like, it's not that different than, I think, Keon ran a 4.61, whatever it was. It wasn't an elite time. Doesn't mean he can't still be a great player, especially with his size. And if you add the two tight ends and you add a, you know, a Coleman to it, like, all of a sudden you've got, you know, bigger receivers, bigger catch radiuses, that kind of thing for Josh to work with. So not to say they can't work, but it doesn't exactly fit the bill of what you were just explaining, what, you know, what Brandon had to say after the draft or after, you know, free agency and after the combine.
Brian, when we were in Indianapolis for the combine, Sal and I, we recorded an episode every single day of the podcast. In one of the episodes, we were just kind of talking about guys we didn't think we'd be talking about, but now are. And Ladd McConkey was that guy. It felt like we both walked away from the combine like, hey, maybe Ladd McConkey makes more sense than we initially gave him credit for. What do you think about that potential fit in Buffalo?
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
I think he's going to be I think there's comparisons to a guy like Julian Edelman, just his route running, his size, his, you know, his just the how he attacks the football, how he sets his defenders up. He looks like he's probably more of a slot receiver than he is outside, but he played outside of Georgia. And he was really successful. I mean, you could see him beat elite corners. I put Terrion Arnold, you put these guys up there in the SEC, and he beat elite corners one-on-one. And if you're going to be an elite receiver, either a number one, number two, you better be able to beat, you know, great corner play. And it starts with being able to beat those guys one-on-one.
We talk a lot about best player versus, you know, need. This happens every year in the draft. I think the way I've tried to phrase it for people is, well, it's the best player as long as that a position you actually could need. You're not going to take the best player if it's a quarterback in Buffalo because you have Josh Allen. So it kind of fits both ways. But we do have a question here from Colin who tweets it and says, knowing the way Bean operates, if a defensive player, let's say Kool-Aid or Byron Murphy, fell into their lap at 28 and some of the top five receivers were gone, what would be the better way? What's your philosophy on that, Brian?
Well, I mean, look, if you just mentioned those two players, Byron Murphy or Kool-Aid, at 28, and then you say, okay, what's the best receiver remaining? Like, are we at number five on the receiving chart? Are we at number six? Are we at number seven? Because if you stay at 28, you're probably going to get the fifth, sixth, or seventh best receiver, how they fall. So then you go, okay, Byron Murphy is a first-round pick. There's no question about it. Kool-Aid is their starting corner. It's a real position of need. So that's just one of those conversations you have in that room with Sean McDermott and Brandon and the staff, and you just go, okay, who's the best? Not necessarily you could listen to your board. You can listen to your needs. Can we get a receiver that can start for us and be impactful for Josh, you know, at number 60, if they stay at 60 in the second round? Or, you know, do we have to get him here? My philosophy is you have Josh Allen. You mentioned the window. That's real. You do everything you can to surround Josh with as much talent as you possibly can. The offensive line, I feel, has been upgraded over the last 2 years. You move on from Mitch right now. Connor probably comes in to center. You know, so you keep the offensive line strong as you can. You bring Deion Dawkins back. A little subterfuge there with Deion, you know, when he re-signed. But, you try and keep building around that quarterback for as long as you can.
When you think
maybe,
about the
maybe you also send a message to Josh saying, look, we know whatever. I don't think Josh has to respond to, you know, moving on from Stephon, but I'm sure it's people are going to hit him during, OTAs and mini camps and all that stuff. But, you know, you want to kind of like say, this is what we're doing in the draft for you, Josh. Like, we know we've lost a Pro Bowl receiver, but this is what we're bringing in right now.
If Josh is at voluntary workouts this week, like he has been in years past, the first question, the second question, the third question, almost every single question he's going to be asked is going to be about Stephon Diggs. Besides wide receiver, though, what other positions do you look at the Bills and say, oh, they need to address that moving forward?
Well, you could say that they're okay at safety, but we know the two safeties have been there as long as Sean McDermott's been there, and they're no longer there. And they've been the backbone to this defense, regardless of who was rushing the passer, regardless of who was playing linebacker. I think it's a position of need. I think corner is a position of need. Now, like, it doesn't, you know, Kaiir Elam is still there. He was beaten out by Christian Benford as a rookie. I don't know how much, you know, I mean, Benford, I think, is still probably in the depth chart in front of him. They move on from Tredavious. Like, corner is a position of need. Pass rusher, to me, they missed on Boogie Basham. Maybe Rousseau is going to be that elite guy, and they bring back A.J. Epinesa. Like, maybe those guys can be that. But when they needed those guys, any of them, Ed Oliver, to go impact Patrick Mahomes and Joe Burrow, they haven't been able to do it. So you can throw a dart at any position on defense outside inside linebacker, because I think both those guys are good players. They have to stay healthy. Although, look, both those guys, Bernard and Milano, are undersized. And so you're undersized at that position. Maybe there's a bigger injury history to you. So I feel like you could throw a dartboard at the defense. And you there's a position of need right there.
One position that we've talked about a lot in the past, but really not as much this year. Now, they have had some changes, is the position you played, offensive line. The Bills seem like they're very confident in what they have. Aaron Cromer is an excellent coach. They really like having him. They're going to move Connor McGovern over to center. He's a bigger center. So I want to have two questions here. First of all, is there any you played offensive line, you played center. He's one of the bigger centers that you'll find out there. Is there a challenge with being a bigger center when it comes to playing against some of these elite defensive tackles? And also, I want to ask you about Osiris Torrence, who I know we talked about last year, and this guy played, believe it or not, every single snap of his first NFL season on the offensive line.
They love Osiris. They love him. I mean, I've talked to Aaron Cromer a couple times about him. I forget the nickname he had for him. It was pretty good, though.
Cybo.
So, I mean, he was a rock in there. You know, they brought in David Edwards. Aaron coached him with the Rams. Yep. So he's coming. Wisconsin kid. You usually can't go wrong with these Wisconsin offensive linemen. They drafted one literally every year in Los Angeles in the middle rounds. So maybe they feel good. But to answer your question about taller centers, yeah, it could be a problem. Mm-hmm. But your offensive line is only going to be as good as your center.
Right.
If you have a weak center, if there's a weakness there, he's getting pushed in the pocket. They're not getting to the second level in the run game. It's going to show up. It's just going to show up. And so Connor's played center before. You generally don't see, I think Connor's 6'6", 6'5". Like, you generally don't see guys that size, although Joe Tippmann was drafted by the Jets last year. Maybe he's 6'4", but with his mullet, he's 6'6". You know, but so, you know, maybe that's just all that is. But you got to bend your knees. You got to play with leverage. You got to play with knee bend. You got to play with leverage. Otherwise, these, you know, the Ed Olivers of the world, the guys that are 6 foot, the Aaron Donalds, all those guys that are undersized, they just push you back.
Brian, when we look back at last year's class, Osiris Torrence was, you know, the pleasant surprise, especially just the way he performed this past year. But I know a lot of Bills fans are really excited about what Dalton Kincaid did and what he probably has the potential to do. I know that a class is more than two guys, but when you look back on last year's draft with those two specifically, do you think that this could be kind of a building block class for the Bills moving forward?
Well, there's no doubt that those two guys that drafted that you just speak of are building blocks. I mean, you've got those guys you know, for the next 4 years, for sure. Kincaid, I don't know if he had 70, 75 catches. He was excellent. Mm-hmm. He was excellent, excellent. I mean, what you wanted from that position, you got. And that's what he was coming out of college. He was a great route runner. He was very smooth. He showed all those things. Osiris was a big guard that looked good at Florida, and he stepped in and he played. And when they became and transitioned to a run-first team, that tackle trap they ran with Deion Dawkins, with, you know, with Spencer Brown, with those – tackle traps that they ran was their number one play. They ran it over and over again. And Osiris was a big part of that. So, I mean, if you could strike gold at 28-60, if you stay there with what they did last year like that, you get four more building blocks with Josh Allen at the quarterback. I mean, it goes a long ways to keeping this franchise successful and being built for the postseason.
Before we let you go, Brian, I don't want to ask you a couple of league questions, unless, Matt, you have anything specific on the Bills before we do that.
No, I think we're
okay.
Good.
Let me go back to the owners' meetings. I was there. Matt was there. They have the huge kickoff rule change, right? You're a guy that's followed this league a long time. This is a massive, massive change, not only in the rule, but actually maybe in roster construction and how teams are going to approach this. What's your thought on overall what they did there? And I also want to ask you about the hip drop tackle and the decision to ban it.
Well, the kickoff return, I guess, you know, there'll be more returns. There'll be a bigger need for coverage people. This isn't going to be just, you know, another play where it's, you know, we're just going to put the ball to 25 and line up and play. So it's a little gimmicky to me, you know, it's a little cute, but I understand the need and we'll see. Like, these things are on the table. We've seen where every single pass interference penalty can be challenged and that thing was one and done. Like, maybe this is one and done, but maybe the kickoff return and the need for kickoff returners is real, and maybe that's another game-changing play, flipping field position, scoring. Maybe you get some of that out of it, which could be exciting, and maybe something where people really start looking at the kick return position. Maybe it's a starting receiver. You know, maybe it's just like your best open field runner. Like, I don't know exactly what that is going to entail yet. We're going to find out. So I think that's that. I think the hip drop tackle, I think we're in a little danger territory. Because I just think it's going to be a judgment call. And it's just going to – like, if when we go to these meetings in the summer and we start asking Walt Anderson and whoever about this hip drop tackle, and they're going to put up a bunch of examples, like you got to turn the hip in order for it. Mark Andrews being tackled by the linebacker from Cincinnati and breaks his ankle. That's not a hip drop because he didn't turn him. I just think we're in that gray area of judgment, and I just think it's difficult – to get. And let's just say it's 3rd and 20 and Buffalo's playing the Jets and it's national TV and it's, I don't know, Sunday night football, whatever. And the Bills have 3rd and 20 and they get called for a hip drop tackle and the Jets get a first down out of that. Like, it's game changing play.
That's right.
Right there. Especially if it's just a judgment call and nobody got hurt. It was just a tackle. Right. And the only way you can make this tackle is by diving, grabbing them by the hips to try to pull them down. I just think I believe we're going to be in a danger territory.
Just another advantage for the offense because there weren't enough already, right?
Pretty much. I mean, that play that I mentioned, Mark Andrews, I went back and watched that play. Logan Wilson was a linebacker from Cincinnati. And they're at the 9-yard line. Mark Andrews breaks a tackle from the safety. He's going to score. And all Logan Wilson can do is just reach out and just grab whatever he can to get Mark. There was no intent to hurt him or anything like that. He's just literally, if he doesn't tackle him where he does, it's a touchdown. And the Ravens are up 7-0. And I go, every linebacker in football, I don't care, Fred Taylor or Fred Warren or, you know, just pick a guy, you know, Bernard, Matt Milano, like they're going to do the same thing in that situation. And if they get called, they get called. But they're doing everything they can to stop Andrews from scoring.
Yeah. One last one for me, Brian. We sit here for the last 4 years. The Bills have been the team in the AFC East. And last year, it didn't look like it was going to be that way. And then, you know, Miami falls off and the Bills kind of surge at the end. I know it's only April, but as of right now, who is the biggest threat to the Bills in the AFC East?
I think the Jets are. I mean, nobody thinks that Aaron Rodgers is going to play four plays again. We don't know what he's going to be. Nobody knows. But that could be the deepest, best defensive line in football. They're built around their defensive front. They've got depth things that they got to address on defense. But they've got six former first-round draft picks on their defensive line. And, you know, I think Hassan Reddick is a big upgrade over Bryce Huff. You know, you look at the development of Jermaine Johnson. We'll see what Will McDonald looks like to go with what they have, to go with the linebackers. I'm talking about their defense because I think they're going to be very good. And then if Aaron Rodgers plays anywhere near Aaron Rodgers' level behind an offensive line that looks good on paper right now, we got to see if two 33-year-old tackles hold up. That looks like the biggest challenger to me.
Last thing here, and I save this for last when I have a little fun with you and give a little history lesson for everybody out there with Brian Baldinger here who joined us. And thank you very much, Brian. We really appreciate you joining us here on the podcast. So I do a radio show here in Buffalo. I just turned 51 10 days ago. My co-host, Joe, Sneaky Joe DiBiase, is like 30 years old. Matt's 20 years younger than me. These gentlemen do not remember Plan B free agency. Brian Baldinger, you were a Plan B free agent who signed with the Buffalo Bills. You were in Buffalo for the offseason. Actually, I believe you were on the team with your brother for a little while here in Buffalo. Plan B free agency, before they had all this other normal, you know, just regular unrestricted free agency. What was that like going through that, coming to Buffalo and being having a chance to play with your brother for a few months here in the offseason?
Yeah, well, I mean, what it was they could protect 37 players were frozen on the roster.
Think about this, Matt.
The rest were free agents. You could still keep your contract, but you could go test the market. Well, Marv Levy had built this juggernaut in Buffalo. You know, we all know the names. And I thought my brother was on the team. They were a Super Bowl contender. Let me go play with my brother. Let me go see what Marv Levy and Jim Kelly and James Lofton and, you know, I mean, the whole group. Let me go see if I can make that team. And I went there the whole offseason. It was unbelievable. I played literally, I think, every snap in the preseason.
Nice.
And then they had drafted John Fina in the first round out of Arizona State. Yeah. And John was – and so, you know, my chance to make the team as a backup offensive lineman kind of got curtailed. But Marv Levy had to cut me at the end of that training camp. And it wasn't an easy decision for him. It wasn't easy for me, but I ended up in Philadelphia. Things worked out good for me. But it was fun to see. I still talk about guys in that team and that locker room and how they built a team and what Marv was like. And so I played for Coach Landry. Marv Levy was the second best coach I ever played for. He was phenomenal. The staff was really good. And I got a chance to play in that special stadium, you know, a couple of times. That was a good memory for me.
I love it. That's great.
Brian, thank you so much for doing this with us every single year. I really appreciate it. Last year, I like the trajectory of this because last year we talked specifically about Osiris Torrance and then the Bills drafted him. So one of the receivers that we had the conversation about just now is probably going to get drafted by the Bills. So that's great. That's good juju for us.
If I can be a forecaster like that.
Yeah,
and we got a new stadium coming across the street from the one you see in your background there. That's going to be opening in a couple of years. So we're excited about that.
Have they broken ground yet?
Steel. There's steel. There's a pit. There's steel. It's on its way. I mean, we got 17 home games remaining in this one, and then in 2026, that thing's going to be open. It's going to be beautiful. It's not going to be a dome. It is going to be grass, but it's going to have an overhang like you see in Tottenham Hotspur when you go there. It's kind of the same thing. So it's going to be pretty cool, and we can't wait for you to come visit and see it.
Well, just because I'm an old head and older than everybody and spent time there. To me, that stadium in my picture, to me, is still the Ralph. Okay. There's only one Ralph Wilson. I still honor Mr. Wilson by calling it the Ralph. We'll think of the new stadium, something different, but that's legendary right there to me.
Well, Brian, thank you so much. We're going to let you go, and we'll wrap up the pod here. But thanks again for doing this, as you do every year. And have fun. I know next week's going to be really busy for everybody, you included, NFL Odyssey Insider Brian Baldinger. Thanks, Brian.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me. Thanks, Al.
Yeah, you got it. You got it. You got it. That is Brian Baldinger. All right. Really good stuff from him. We have the Bills starting offseason workouts today, Matt. And then, of course, we're going to get into the draft next week. So a lot's going on here this week. And, of course, the one thing that happened this past week, I need to ask you about the Masters. How good is Scottie Scheffler, my man? You're a golfer. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, he's just so consistent. We'll talk about that in a second.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with The Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
All right. So I can tell you, Josh Allen is in Orchard Park. This happened while we were recording. So the Bills quarterback is in Orchard Park for voluntary workouts. Also, what happened while we were recording that segment with Brian, did you see the new Jets jerseys?
I have not.
So they just revealed them. I believe it was at 9 a.m. So first thing in the morning, we saw firsthand the white version of them last year for the September 11th opener, the one that Rodgers wore. They are gorgeous. I mean, I knew what they were going to look like. They are just so much better than what they had before. Aren't those just really, really clean?
Yeah. I've always thought the Jets uniforms are pretty clean. Like, I like the...
I hated them. Oh, I hated them. The old... The ones that they were just wearing.
The new ones they got last year,
so ugly. But I thought these new ones are really, really just simple and clean. The colors pop on them. The away jersey is especially impressive to me.
Apparently, the Jaguars are bringing back their throwback uniforms as well, I just read.
And actually, Adam Schefter tweeted that the Lions are announcing new jerseys this week, too. And since the last time we talked, the rule had changed with the league that they could now add another helmet to their rotation.
Yes.
I believe starting next year, though, right? That's not an immediate change. That's a next year thing.
I think that's correct. We'll see what the Bills want to do. There's always... It's a yearly question we get a lot. There was a reason why they didn't do the third helmet and the alternate helmet and the red and all that kind of stuff. So that's going to start popping up again. So, I didn't even know all that stuff happened while we're recording. So, yes, there you go. So Josh Allen is at offseason workouts. He always is.
Yeah.
People ask us when we're going to hear from people. It'll be later this week, probably Thursday. Not for sure. Mm-hmm. Did that come through yet? I'm not exactly sure if they even announced yet when we're going to be down at the stadium. But I think it's going to be maybe on Thursday.
Later this week, I would imagine we hear from a couple different players that are in town, and then we'll also hear from Brandon Bean one more time before the draft starts, which is now less than 2 weeks away. Were there any questions specifically from the post that you posted that you want to answer?
Well, I asked them for Baldy, but we could have a couple of our own, I guess, here. Let me see here. Drafting.
This one's from Nathan. If the Bills don't take a receiver at 28, is defensive end the most likely? And then how bad will Bills Twitter be for the rest of the season? I think that's probably accurate. I think it would be some sort of defensive lineman. I don't necessarily know if it would be an edge rusher, but I do think that if it's not wide receiver, here's a question for you. What's more likely, that they stay at 28 and they don't draft a receiver, or that they trade back? because to me, I think that if they're at 28 and they don't love what's on the board, they would trade back and try and recoup a third round pick that they didn't get from the compensatory formula.
That's probably right because of the third round pick. It's a good point you bring, and it's actually a really good question from James. It's on this note. James did tweet in, how much does a lack of third round pick affect Bean's ability to move up in the first round if going up into the top 10 is too expensive, but a wide receiver he likes slides into the 20s? It does impact it, but he might have to dip into next year. He might take that second rounder he got next year. That might be what he has to do. And part of the reason he held to get maybe a second round pick for Stephon Diggs, even though it's 2025, that might be something he has to use, Matt, to move up if he wants to do it, wherever that might be.
Yeah. The other one was just what receiver do you think has the highest upside? And Brian talked about it a little bit, but of the three at the top, I think Brian's answer to my question was interesting perspective because I think locally, we think that there's a greater chance that the Bills make a massive move than nationally. Because right. When I said that, I think he looked at me like, well, those guys aren't going to be there. And I'm like, oh, no, I know that. Like, we're having the conversation of would it be worth two ones and a two to go up and do that, which I don't think maybe on the outside is something that a lot of people are talking about. But obviously here, we're looking at it from a very just Bills viewpoint. I don't know. It's really interesting because I've had so many different conversations now over the last couple weeks. It feels like Neighbors might have the highest ceiling, mm-hmm. but Odunze has the highest floor. And I feel like Odunze fits with the Bills just Agreed. Really, really well. Like, I think that if they're making a trade up, that would be the guy that they would take.
The other thing that, and we've talked about this before, there's a difference between nationally and locally. Brian just underscored this. Look how he's talking about corner being a need.
Christian Benford.
Isn't that right? Like, now I would say for anybody who says corner's a need, I agree with that because if Kyrie Elam doesn't step up, they have nothing outside of the top two outside guys, right? It's Benford and it's Douglas. We don't know after that. I like Jamarcus Ingram, but you can't count on him. They're going to need another corner. There's no doubt. But here's another person in Brian Balding. You're saying, look, I mean, it's a major need. I don't think it's a major need for a starter. I would also say Christian Benford has had some injury issues and Russell Douglas is 31 years old. They do have to add to the spot, but man, this comes down to a lot of Matt, what Kyrie Elam can be and is.
Yeah, for sure. And I just think that now if Kyrie Elam can't be your number three, then you just probably need to move on. I know he's on a really cost controlled contract for now, another year or two, but I don't think it's a position that they would spend a premium asset on right now. I think they have much more pressing needs unless you love somebody, unless there's a guy who's available that you never thought would be available. I just don't see them using a first or second round pick on a cornerback, given that they just did it on Kyrie Elam and it didn't work out. They already have Russell Douglas. They have Christian Benford from the same class as Kyrie Elam. The one thing, for as inconsistent as the Bills have been drafting, their ability to draft secondary members late in drafts has been pretty consistent. Like, they've hit on Dane Jackson.
Well,
Taron
that's
Johnson
because they're
obviously
good at developing them.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's a system that is catered to success, and that can even be pointed to the safeties. Like, Micah Hyde and Jordan Poyer were exceptional signings, but there's a reason that they got continuously better as they were in Buffalo and that they were able even to get him in the first place.
Well, it's Sean McDermott, Leslie Frazier, of course, John Butler has been there. And then, of course, Bobby Babich, who's now linebackers coach and then became defensive coordinator recently. But they are just good coaches. And Sean McDermott has always been, that's his specialty, the secondary defensive backs. And they've been able to develop those guys. All right, before we head out, Scotty Scheffler, real quick, before I go, I have to do my own live show here in about 15 minutes. So give me something on Scotty Scheffler and how good he is.
I just think that he's so there's no blowups. That's the thing that's so impressive about Scottie Scheffler. Like, you're watching the final round of the Masters and all of these other guys are in contention have a bad hole or a couple bad holes. Like, his bad hole is a bogey. Imagine being able to go golf and knowing that your floor is a bogey. It's like, okay, well, if I don't play well on this hole, I'm going to get a bogey. Not that I'm going to double. And I think that that's what's so impressive about him is that he is not, you know, super he's just really steady. And you know, for the first couple days of the tournament, it didn't really look like he was gonna run away with it, and then as time moved on, he just kind of pulls away.
Do you agree that a lot of what I wrote Scotty Scheffler's a machine, and I got several people going, yeah, but he's too boring for me. Like, what's your response to that?
Well, he is a little bit, but like it's tough because he's so likable. But he's so like, you know what I mean? Like people want to pick apart all of these guys. Maybe they want somebody who's a little bit more polarizing. Maybe they want somebody who has not won it before. But for me, like I like to witness greatness. So I think Scottie Scheffler is now on a trajectory of this guy could absolutely have a career grand slam. And I think that he's probably going to win at least like five majors. So I always like watching those guys win. Sure, it's a cool story if somebody gets there first. But, you know, for me, like besides Rory and Tiger, Scottie Scheffler is very high on my list of guys who I enjoy watching.
All right. I want to thank Mike Rabier for producing as always. We want to thank Brian Baldinger, especially for joining us here on It's Always Game Day in Buffalo. The next, maybe not the next time, but next week, we're going to have Mike North on. We're going to record our podcast with Mike North about the schedule. That's going to be coming up. So we want schedule questions, right, Matt? We want people to fire us off their schedule questions. And if we can, you know, anything we can ask Mike North we don't normally think about, we're going to do that. Christmas games this year, of course, Bills related, primetime, that kind of stuff. We're going to go through all that. And we're going to have Mike North on next week. I'm looking forward to it.
Favorite podcast of the year. It's no disrespect to any other guests that we have or any other episodes that we do, but we are schedule nerds. I could sit here and talk about the schedule for months and months and months. I have some conflicts this year that I would like to try and avoid. You know, I missed a friend's wedding that I was in because of the London game last year. So the schedule kind of bit me hard last year. This year, I got those Taylor Swift tickets in Toronto.
Yes.
I got them during Bill's training camp last year. So that was already a year and a half ahead of time. But the only ones I was able to get were a Saturday. So for me, if it's a Saturday and the next day's a road game, I'm not going to go because how could I go?
You're not going to go to the Taylor Swift concert then.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So, you know, there's going to London and then there's, you know, Taylor Swift, like different levels of like commitment of things that could. So I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen, but I could talk about the schedule nonstop.
We're going to do that next week. So yeah, stay with us all week long. We're going to have, you know, coverage for you on WKBW TV channel 7, where Matt is the sports director, of course, WGR Sports Radio 550, and here on It's Always Game Day in Buffalo. We got a lot coming at you throughout this week. For, by the way, where can you find us? Video, Sal Sports YouTube channel, audio, wherever you pod. Thanks a lot to Mike Rabier once again. We'll talk to you next time on It's Always Game Day in Buffalo.